are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Time now for Locked On NBA. David Locke along with Ben Golliver, the Thursday edition of the program. And they only give us 30 minutes, but they gave us 10 games. And other than maybe Sacramento's 121-119 win over Washington, and maybe San Antonio's 106-99 win over Chicago, there's not a game that doesn't have something like really interesting to it tonight, Ben. This is pretty awesome.
No, it was an absolutely stacked night. I think kind of made even more interesting by the fact that one of the teams in the East that's now kind of threatening to be that number one seed, they go out there and make a trade for P.J. Tucker. That's the Milwaukee Bucks. And they have this kind of like really frenetic game against Philly. And obviously it would have been a lot more fun if Embiid had played, but still just, you know, that was the one that I was watching. But you go up and down and you've got playoff implications. You've got play-in round implications. You've got some teams that are going home feeling like, who are we? You know, the Boston Celtics are probably feeling that right now. And, you know, you had some big swings in these games too, just big comebacks. I mean, Milwaukee's was a big comeback. I think San Antonio mounted a big comeback as well. So just another night out here in the NBA Association.
What is your take on the PJ Tucker deal?
I like it for Milwaukee because I didn't really think that DJ Augustin or DJ Wilson was going to give them much in the playoffs. Augustin, to me, was kind of their backup plan when the Bogdanovic thing didn't work out. I didn't really like that contract, 3-for-21, when they did it. So I think it's actually a win not only to bring in P.J. Tucker, but also to just kind of get off of that future money. I didn't think the price was super high on the draft picks, in part because they just kind of switched the 2022 for the 2023. And then this year's pick, they're basically giving up what's going to be a super late first for what's going to be a very early second. So you're not changing, you know, draft order spots all that much. Now, how much does PJ Tucker have left is a very fair question. There's no doubt. He has kind of been in the same mode that James Harden was before the trade from Houston, where he's just not really putting out max effort. They kept him away from the team after the All-Star break. But I still think that there's something left in the tank there. And they're going to need more defensive-minded players. I mean, you look at their defensive efficiency. It's fallen from first last year to ninth this year. There were some pretty key moments against the Sixers tonight where they just couldn't even get a stop, and they were doing just kind of goofy things. And I kept thinking, wow, you know, P.J. Tucker would help as long as he's still got something left in the tank. So that's the big question. But I like it for them because they just have holes in their rotation, and it also keeps him away from joining Brooklyn or joining Philadelphia or joining one of these other contenders where he would have been a good fit too. So overall, I'd give it a thumbs up. But I saw on Twitter you were going the other way. You thought maybe they overthought it. They should have been running Torrey Craig out there more.
So the only thought I have, I had a few thoughts. One is obviously I wonder whether PJ Tucker still has anything at 36 years old. He hasn't looked like it, and I didn't think he really looked like it last year. The second one is like he was a creation of James Harden. Like James Harden is the greatest offensive player the game may have ever seen. Truly the greatest offensive player. And P.J. Tucker played every minute with James Harden. Now, so those are the two reasons why I kind of have doubts that it works there. I think he's 36. I think the knees might be gone. I think the body might be gone. And I think he's been created by James Harden. The only thing I would say is he does bring a level of toughness that that team probably doesn't have. Kevin Pelton wrote a good piece about how he's the most switchable big out there. And that's where Bud was can't switch with Bobby Portis or Brook Lopez, so they probably bring that. But I do think I just play Giannis at the five and play Torrey Craig, but they clearly want, you know, they pulled the plug on the Torrey Craig experiment pretty quickly there on the minimum contract, so something wasn't working there on that.
Yeah, he just never trusted Torrey Craig for whatever reason. I do like their lineups when they go smaller now more than previously. I do think you can play Giannis and Tucker together defensively and get by against basically everyone, and that's going to be a really important look for them because last year when they took Lopez off the court, they just didn't have it. You know, it just didn't work out quite as well. I'm totally with you on the all of his offense being derivative in Houston. Just a classic corner three-point shooter, really did nothing else. The occasional offensive rebound and hustle play, but that's pretty much all you're getting on the offensive end. Never dribbling, never driving, never playmaking for his teammates. But I think in Milwaukee, you know, the way they play drive and kick and the way they do move the ball around the perimeter, I think he should be a pretty strong fit, and I think he should get some really good open looks on that team. Obviously, they want to jack threes like crazy. I think they have a top five offense right now. So I do kind of like the offensive fit, not as well as it would have been in Brooklyn, where I think that would have been his ideal scenario, but certainly a lot better than what he was dealing with in Houston, where he just was, you know, barely even taking shots anymore, you know, down the stretch and just kind of going through the motion. So I think I'm probably a little bit more bullish on this one than you are, but your point is right. Like, he's not the same guy he was 3 years ago. The idea of PJ Tucker at his peak going toe to toe with like Draymond Green and those Warriors teams and harassing, you know, bigger, longer scorers with the physical defense on the ball and, you know, being this like all defensive level candidate, he's not quite that guy anymore. And, you know, he really struggled against Anthony Davis during last year's playoffs. I mean, he had a few good moments, but, you know, AD just lit them up in that second round playoff series. Not all PJ Tucker's fault, but certainly he was getting a lot of, you know, one-on-one defensive assignments there. And so I do think, you know, it's best to treat this as like a muted win rather than some like gigantic celebration.
Frankly, much more important for Milwaukee is Giannis Antetokounmpo's overtime tonight. 4-of-4 from the field, 1-of-1 from three, split his free throws, had 10 points, 2 rebounds, and answered the bell in the OT as Milwaukee beat Philadelphia. Here's Locked On Bucks host Kane Pittman about the win.
What's up, everyone? Kane Pittman here from Locked On Bucks. Back for a second clip today. It's been a busy day for the Milwaukee Bucks, a reported PJ Tucker trade earlier, basically right on tip-off, and now a fun 109-105 win over the Sixers in which was really a grinded-out game. I feel like I went back to 2005 and I was watching the Pistons and Spurs for the most part of this one. But if you're Milwaukee, you don't take anything out of this in regards to what a playoff matchup would look like, because the reality is Joel Embiid wasn't there and this was a game that you should win. But what you do take out of it is big shots from different guys. In regulation, it was Lopez, DiVincenzo, and Drew Holiday. In the overtime, it was Giannis. And this is a big deal for this Bucks team, because in the offseason, this is what they wanted to do. They wanted to be able to have guys, that different types of guys that are going to take shots in close games down the stretch. They've struggled with that at times in the past. It's been all Giannis and all Chris. But we've seen more and more this season that other guys are willing to step up. Drew Holiday does not care about the moment. He wants the ball in his hand. He wants to take that shot. And that's going to be significant for the Bucks in a playoff series and potentially against the Sixers, but against the other contenders in the East as well. So I think the Bucks feel good walking away from this one. They've now won 10 out of the last 11, so they are rolling. We're going to talk about the PJ Tucker trade. We're going to talk about this game on post-game Locked On Bucks, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben, that's a good win for them tonight.
Well, they needed it. I mean, first of all, they got down big early, and then they did not shoot the three-point ball well. So, you know, it could have been one of those games where you just roll over and die. They did it. Now, at the same time, Kane's totally right. I mean, they got some really clutch shots from a bunch of different spots, and they were doing a nice job of keeping the offense balanced in terms of not just Giannis going downhill over and over again, moving the basketball, and, you know, turning good shots into great shots late in that game. But they also had some really concerning brain farts, Locke. You know, I'm a big Chris Middleton fan. I'm always out here standing for him. But there was a couple of decisions late in that game that just drove me crazy. I mean, he throws this crazy lob pass over the top to Giannis in the last minute of regulation that goes for a turnover. Very risky play in that situation. Just no time score recognition whatsoever. And then 3 seconds left in regulation. You know, Philadelphia is screwing up. They can't foul him. He could just run the clock out. They win the game. Instead, he doesn't. You know, he gets fouled for some, or he takes the layup rather. It gives Philadelphia a chance to tie it on the other end with a three-pointer. So to me, I still think, even though it was progress for them in late game situations, because they did have the secondary and complementary guys stepping up, there's still a lot of stuff they need to iron out in those moments. They really haven't quite figured it out. And I know a big problem for them is that they're just simply not in that many close games, so they don't get a lot of reps with it. But this is one of those games where, like, both teams had a chance to win. Both teams kind of blew chances to win this game. And then ultimately, like you mentioned at the top, Giannis was the one who put it away with a really nice scoring stretch in overtime. And frankly, he took the challenge against Ben Simmons very personally. I thought Simmons played him well defensively for a lot of the night. But when it mattered, Giannis got where he needed to go pretty easily.
Other big Eastern Conference matchup was the Brooklyn Nets and the Indiana Pacers. Well, they're a bunch of great games, but this one, Brooklyn gets the win 124-115, but they played without Durant. They played without Kyrie. And from the Pacers standpoint, they just cannot click in. Here's Locked On Pacers host Tony East.
Pacers lose to the Nets 124-115. I'm Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers, here to break it down, and it's the same story we've had for the Pacers for basically every game they've played since the All-Star break. A terrible fourth quarter causes them to lose. They were winning at the end of the third quarter. They lose the fourth quarter 35-24 and fall at home to Brooklyn 124-115. Since the All-Star break, the Pacers have played four games. In those four games in the fourth quarter, they have been outscored by 52 points. It's been brutal. They blew it against the Lakers. They really blew it against the Nuggets. They blew it again tonight against the Nets. The players are frustrated. The fans are frustrated. Everyone's frustrated. They've got to figure something out closing these games because their grip on any sort of spot in the playoffs, even the play-in game, is starting to slip away. They're down to 17-22. We'll break it all down on Locked On Pacers. Come check us out.
Tony, not so happy. You know, what's interesting about them is they bring in Bjorkman, who might be a perfectly good head coach, getting rid of Nate McMillan. And I just think one of the things that's under-talked about with coaching, and I think NBA Twitter is responsible for this. I was talking to actually a coach in the NBA about this tonight. You know what is the single most important thing a team has to do? Play hard. Play hard. Indiana used to play as hard as any team in the NBA with an edge. And maybe Nate's stuff wasn't creative, and maybe he didn't take enough threes, but they played hard. And I don't feel like this team plays as hard.
Well, look at what Atlanta's doing right now, too, Locke. I mean, I think they're undefeated with Nate McMillan as their coach, and they're playing pretty hard in those situations. Now, it's been a little bit of a softer part of the schedule for Atlanta, but that's been Nate's signature going back to the Sonics days, really. I mean, you can go back decades, and that's what his teams have done. And sometimes guys tune that out. You know, you can't get that grinding mentality forever. I mean, that's been a problem for Thibodeau as well. Things go great for a year or two. You get to year three or four, and then maybe you're not getting that same effort. But certainly that wasn't something that we questioned from Indiana before, and now you do have to look at that. I also think they just got bum timing with that trade, the Oladipo trade. You know, not having LeVert for such a long stretch, trying to get him back into the mix, and it's great to see him back on the court from a health standpoint, but that's going to take a while to kind of get your balance right. But, Locke, I also want to say this. I mean, let's not fault Indiana necessarily for this loss. This is Brooklyn doing Brooklyn things right now. They are an absolute juggernaut. It doesn't matter if Kevin Durant's out there. Harden's line tonight, 40 points, 10 rebounds, 15 assists on just 27 shots. You know, they don't even have Kyrie, but that's plenty for them to get it done. They are 14-1 in their last 15 games, and they've won 8 of those 14 wins are by double figures. They're just absolutely smacking everybody. So it's no real shame for a team that's under 500 in Indiana to lose to a team like Brooklyn that's going to be in this fight for the number one seed no matter how long it takes Kevin Durant to get back.
And you thought I was crazy when I said James Harden was going to win the MVP.
I didn't. I didn't know if I would bet on it. I certainly didn't think you were crazy. He's in this conversation.
Well, he certainly is in this conversation. What comes first for a guy like James Harden? Is it the enjoyment, the winning, the happiness? Or does the winning cause the joy, or does the joy cause the winning? It's only worth it if you enjoy it. 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. It's Michelob Ultra. That's right, Michelob Ultra. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you are happy? Michelob Ultra's player of the week, the one that brings the most joy to the game. Dame Lillard's got to be right up there, Ben Golliver. Or I got to say, Luka Doncic smiles more than any player when he plays. I'm going either Luka or Dame for the Michelob Ultra Player of the Week, the one who brought the most joy to the game.
I saw a Blazers fan tweet that Damian Lillard is so clutch that when he hits game winners, it's barely even fun anymore because he does it so often. So he's brought so much joy that it's like actually decrease the joy that fans are feeling from each one of his miraculous shots. That's pretty special.
That's pretty good. All right, it's all at Michelob Ultra Joy. Create success. Enjoyment isn't the end game, it's the whole game. 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. It's Michelob Ultra. The Locked On Bets is our new betting podcast for you. It's hosted by your boy Q with Lee Sterling, the expert, and it's all brought to you by betonline.ag. BetOnline.ag is the fastest and easiest way to bet your sports action. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, reality TV. And with the promo code LOCKEDON, BetOnline.ag will give you a 50% welcome bonus. The NCAA futures are up, the props are up, and all the NBA futures as well for you, such as MVP, James Harden, still good bet. Western Conference champion, Do you believe in the Denver Nuggets yet enough to put a down on them? There's a lot of good ones out there. It is all at betonline.ag. And make sure that you use the promo code LOCKEDON to get a 50% welcome bonus. That, my friends, is free money from betonline.ag. Well, we mentioned Luka. Let's hear from Nick Angstead of Locked On Mavericks.
Nick Angstead with the Locked On Mavericks podcast here. The Dallas Mavericks get the win over the LA Clippers. Their second win of the season against the Clippers. They lost on Monday, but got the win in the revenge game. Second of the series. Luka Doncic, an incredible game. 40 for Luka in the game. Just hitting shots all over the place. Put Paul George on the ground three different times with crossovers. Only hit one of the shots afterwards, but it was the clincher at the end. Absolute incredible game. Great game defensively from the Mavericks. Held the Clippers to 89 points, which is insanely good against this Clippers team. That's a really, really good offense. Weird game for the Clippers, but Dallas Mavericks take this win. We'll talk all about it on the Locked On Mavericks podcast.
Well, the flip side of this is what's going on with the Clippers. Let's check in and hear from our guys in the Clippers podcast.
What's going on, Clippers fans? Chuck Mockler here, one half of the hosting duo over at Locked On Clips, coming at you after a horrendous shooting night dooms the Clippers in Dallas. They made 28% of their threes. They didn't even break 90, but the defense did its job. They only allowed 105 points total, which when Luka Doncic has 40 points, isn't so bad. Paul George added 28 and looked fantastic. Hopefully his shot comes back or is back. And let's hope the shots fall against the Hornets on Saturday, because if they're not, hey, we might not break 90 again.
All right, Ben, this was a big one. Dallas wins their eighth of their last 11. The Clippers are the only team who's lost more games than they've won in the last 10. They've now lost seven of their last 11. They slide to, I believe, a game away from being out of home court in the first round. Dallas trying to work their way up to catch Portland, moves to within two games of Dame and the Blazers. Luka was ridiculous. I mean, ridiculous. But the Clippers' defense, I'm not sure I agree, was as good as my good friend over at Locked On Clippers, Mr. Mockler, had to say, because I don't know. I felt like in the way this game was going, slow-paced, half-court, I didn't think they actually had that good a defensive game. Maybe it was just because Luka was that great.
Yeah, I mean, Luka is just an absolute stud, and let's not forget how much trouble they had stopping him during last year's playoffs too, right? I mean, they've really struggled with these lead ball handlers. Can they contain them? And to me, it's stunning, because if you go back to when Kawhi Leonard and Paul George first teamed up, we thought that that was going to be their biggest strength, right? Like kind of their signature ability. And I think this season they've become more really of a three-point shooting team as opposed to this lockdown, elite, versatile perimeter defense that can take away your best player. They're just not that team. I've been pretty underwhelmed with the Clippers for a while now. They're too predictable in late-game situations. They don't get the right type of shots, and their defense is simply overrated. I'm very curious to see, will Steve Ballmer be one of the rare, you know, buyers at this year's deadline? It seems like a lot of teams are hesitant to take on salary. Does he have any pieces he can even give up to go make some moves? I think that's an open question, but he can't be happy watching this team lose games the same way over and over again like they have been lately. On the other side, I do really want to tip our hats to Luka Doncic. You'll remember their season was hanging by a thread in January, Locke. I mean, the COVID stuff was going crazy for their team. Lots of guys in and out of the lineups. They never had their best five players together. Porzingis was out, you know, late coming back because of the knee injury. Luka was frustrated. He was down on himself with the body language. He was able to kind of rebound from all that, keep his focus. Their three-point shot improved. Their team's three-point shooting as a team improved. He became a more effective scoring player, with more help around him. And that's exactly what their formula was last year. It worked last year. You're starting to see it work again this year. And I do think they're going to be a tough out for anybody they play in the playoffs. To me, they're kind of a sleeping giant. I'm not saying they're going to make a Western Conference Finals run, but I think they're one of those teams where things were so ugly early on that they've kind of been, you know, digging out of a hole. And to me, they're just better than 21-18. That's their record right now. But if you're saying put them in a playoff series, they're better than that.
If five great teams in the West, and then Dame in Portland, six, Luka in Dallas, seven, like, this is going to be a bloodbath for anyone. Utah, Phoenix, Denver, and the two LA teams are all excited about what they're doing. No one's getting through this first round with anything of ease. And I'm not even sure. And maybe it's why the one seed is going to really matter. I mean, there is, I guess there's a little bit of a drop that you get if you're the one seed and you end up with the Warriors, Memphis, or the Spurs in that as the eighth team. And that's just a, frankly, that feels like a really big difference after you go against Dame or Luka.
For sure. I think the two seed could actually matter as well, because the 7 and the 8, they're going to get caught up in that play-in round. What we saw last year was there was that frantic push to get into the playoffs once the bubble started, right? And then there was the play-in round. And so when Portland finally cleared that play-in, they got into the first round. They're exhausted. They're running on fumes. And the Lakers take care of business. So it's actually a nice advantage to have a couple extra days of rest and to have your team, you know, deal with the stress, or have your opponent rather deal with the stress of a winner home or go home type of game. So I think both the 1 and the 2 seed will probably benefit from that, simply because the 7 seed is going to have to prove it with a win to keep their seed, and so on with the 8th, 9th, and 10th seeds, you know, battling for that last spot. So, I think that it shouldn't be overlooked, you know, just kind of the toll that we could see take on some of these teams down the stretch. If you have 3 or 4 teams all pushing in the Western Conference for that play-in race, that could stay pretty tight for a while, stay pretty competitive, and it could really favor the top 2 seeds in the conference.
Back to your comment about the Clippers, I just want to throw out the Clippers' offensive rating tonight was a 93.5. Like Dallas is not thought of as a defensive team, and they're missing Ibaka, but that's not, shouldn't be that much. Like that's a little surprising to me for that team. All the problems with the Clippers showed, just 11 free throw attempts, just 9 made threes. They're really not a great 3-point shooting team other than Paul George. We'll see. That's a great, their offense has been great all year. It wasn't today, which is interesting. By the way, interesting news just came out. The NBA and the NBA Players Association agreed upon eased restrictions for those in the league who have been fully vaccinated. According to Baxter Holmes of ESPN, teams were informed of expanded benefits in a memo that was sent out tonight. So interesting little twist on the whole COVID as we start to make progress as a country in so many ways there. As we continue down the run of ball games that took place tonight, I just want to give we'll talk about Nikola Jokic in a second, and we'll talk about the Celtics struggles in the third segment. Taylor Jenkins, is this guy just like a marvel? If I say Taylor Jenkins, I'll bet you that people don't even know who I'm talking about. He's Memphis's head coach. He's doing it again this year. Like, how do they keep winning games?
You look at the box score, and you're like, nobody scored more than 13 points. We're here in 2021, and that wound up being a win. Explain how that works to me, Log. I don't know. I didn't get to check any of this one, but I've been kind of tooting his horn for the last couple of years. They grind it out. They find different ways to do it. He is very creative. And I guess they probably just caught Miami on an off night, I would imagine. I mean, anytime you're playing a game 89-85, that tells me somebody was throwing up a lot of bricks.
Well, if it was non-COVID, was this game in Memphis or in Miami? Because if it was in Miami and it was non-COVID, I'd say it was South Beach flu hit both teams. They shot a combined 36% and a combined 23% from three. Sean Coleman, Locked On Grizzlies, actually had to watch this. Let's see what he has to say.
It seems the Memphis Grizzlies may have found their new slogan, and that is call 12 from the man himself, Ja Morant, multiple times tonight against the Miami Heat, who have been the league's number one defense over the past month. The Grizzlies called on Ja Morant to deliver, and that is exactly what he did. He fueled a 17-0 run to take the lead back in the third quarter, and then made the game-winning shot in the final seconds to take the Grizzlies to victory. In a game where they needed a win, where they needed to right the ship, Ja Morant delivered and delivered well to give them the victory in a very close-knit, tight game. Another great opportunity for the Grizzlies to display a strength of theirs from the bench, as well as De'Anthony Melton once again showing just how valuable he is. But at the end of the day, when the Grizzlies needed someone to deliver, they called on 12, and he once again answered with a game-winning performance. We'll have this and much more on the post-game edition of the Locked On Grizzlies podcast.
Thank you very much, Sean. All right, Ja Morant had 13 points on 5 of 15 shooting. He led their scores. That's right, 13 points. Crazy game between Memphis and Miami. What's wrong with the Celtics? Is Nikola Jokic the MVP? We'll talk about those two things. But first, Ben Golliver, you know what time it is. It's Rock Auto time. It's the Thursday edition of Locked On NBA. We always talk about Ben and his car prowess. Me making fun of somebody for not having car prowess is truly the pot calling the kettle black. But Rock Auto is a family business that serves auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com, shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. And it doesn't matter if you're a do-it-yourselfer or a professional or a Golliver. It's all the same prices. They're always reliably low. No matter what, you get them. And the Rock Auto prices are the best prices around. As we mentioned, same for professionals as for do-it-yourselfers. Amazing selection, reliably low prices. All the parts your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. And if you're Ben Golliver, it's the greatest selection of windshield wipers that you can actually trade out for yourself so you feel like you have the car gene that neither Ben nor I was ever given in life. Chain stores you different prices. Rock Auto's prices are the same for everyone, and they're reliably low. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. It's rockauto.com. Make sure you write Locked On in the How'd You Hear About Us section of the rockauto.com. Ben Golliver, I have a very important question for you.
All right.
Built Bar matchup, coconut puff or peanut butter?
Peanut butter. The answer is always peanut butter, Locke. I mean, you can put that into any context, but especially the Built Bar context.
All right. Caramel, the matchup, salted caramel or cookie dough chunk?
Peanut butter. I would go with salted caramel.
All right. You think peanut butter is riding this thing all the way through?
It's the king. It's definitely the king.
Built Bar's doing the You Decide, the favorite flavor of all time. We've got the enticing 8 already waiting for the flavorful 4 before it's all over. And then the championship is all coming up at BuiltBar.com. Make sure coconut marshmallow puff against peanut butter is today's matchup. Ben Golliver got the vote in for it before it was too late. Salted caramel versus cookie dough is up. Coconut versus white chocolate birthday cake. Coconut brownie chunk, which is my favorite flavor ever, against lemon almond cheesecake later in the week, and caramel brownie versus double chocolate. And we'll see whether peanut butter actually advances. They'd be in the enticing 8 against mint brownie. It's the best flavor ever. It's Built Bar. Promo code LOCKEDON15 gets you 15% off your next Built Bar order. Go check it out. Built Bar's bracket taking place at builtbar.com/pages/brackets. And you can get your vote in as well. Plus, make sure you use the promo code LOCKEDON15 and get those Built Bars ordered and sent to your home. Boston Celtics lose to the Jazz last night. John Corrales is pretty positive, says a lot of good things. They go on a back-to-back. They lose to the Cavaliers. Let's make sure that John Corrales, Locked On Celtics host, is still okay.
Hey there, John Corrales here from the Locked On Celtics podcast. Brutal loss for the Celtics in Cleveland. No excuses here. Both teams were on a back-to-back, but the Celtics really looked like it in that first half. No real effort. They scored 38 points in the entire first half. Then they went out and scored 36 in each of the third and fourth quarters. So the effort improved, but that didn't really do much because Cleveland was rolling and the Celtics couldn't do anything to stop them. This is a tough loss. They are now in the middle of an 8-game and 12-night stretch. To lose both of these games in the back-to-back is just a killer. Celtics now at 500. They've really made life difficult for them. I'm going to talk about this on the Locked On Celtics podcast, so make sure you are subscribed wherever you get your podcasts.
John was on our daily podcast, Locked On Today, and the question was asked to him, like, where do the Celtics fit in the Eastern Conference, like hierarchy, right? So Philadelphia, Brooklyn, and the Bucks seem to be on one scale. Where is the next tier, and does Boston actually fit into that tier?
Well, here's the thing. You take losses like this, and you really have to ask yourself, like, should they even try to be buyers of the trade deadline to jump up into that top tier, or is the gap so wide that you might as well just punt, you know? And it's, I mean, obviously it's going to be expensive. If you want to use the trade exception to go out and grab a player like Harrison Barnes, which is sort of like the best available move to them, that's kind of their dream scenario right now. That's going to cost ownership a lot of money. And if I look at this roster, the way they've played, the lack of cohesion, the lack of spirit, the just bumbling losses, you know, Kemba Walker not really being that impressive, you know, add all that up together, the questions in the middle in terms of, you know, what is their center position going to look like? And the whole Tristan Thompson experience kind of blew up in their face. I'm ready to punt at this point, Locke. To me, there is such a clear drop from that top tier, the top four in the Eastern Conference. I don't really see anyone else. I mean, not just Boston. I don't see Atlanta. I don't see Indiana. I don't see Toronto. I don't see New York, Chicago. I don't see any of those teams being able to knock off any of the top four. So to me, that the tier goes the big four and everybody else, and Boston's in the everybody else category, and I think they're stuck there. I don't see this thing turning around.
You know, Semi Ojeleye is just, he's not a starting small forward, right? Or I don't even know what he is, power forward, whatever. Like, I do think if they add a Harrison Barnes, and it's super expensive, it's putting something where right now there's basically a zero. And I think it would dramatically change who they are. Like, that's, like, they're, I don't really quite understand them. But if you look at it tonight, I would think their power forward minutes were, you know, kind of 19 minutes from Semi Ojeleye and 22 minutes from Grant Williams for a combined 2 of 10 from the field. Like, that's, that gap that Gordon Hayward left is mammoth. And
sure.
I don't know that they can, you know, fill, like, Harrison Barnes is probably better than people give him credit for. And I just feel like it actually reminds me a little bit of when the Lakers traded for Pau Gasol and they were replacing Kwame Brown. Right, so they were replacing the worst center in the league with a good one. I actually think Boston, basically that fifth starter spot for them is about as bad as any in the NBA right now.
No, I'm with you. It's a huge hole. And if you want to make the argument to trade for Harrison Barnes, it's that, hey, look, even if this season winds up being unsalvageable because you're going to have a tough first-round matchup and just you haven't really had the chemistry, you know, some teams dealt with the bubble better than others. I feel like some teams are dealing with this season a lot better than others, and Boston's just kind of on the short end of the stick this year compared to, you know, they were actually one of the most together and tough-knit groups during the bubble. The argument to trade for Harrison Barnes now would be that you'd get to have him next year, and when you start things fresh, he'd still be a really good fit. You still need everything that he brings to the table, and he gives you much better lineup balance, and you have that group of Brown, Smart, Barnes and Tatum. That's a pretty nice group. You know, they balance each other. They're very versatile two-way competitors and contributors as well. So, you know, you add all those things up, I could see an argument for it. I just wonder if ownership sees it the same way, if they're willing to invest at this point, because it's pretty dark right now. I think, to me, I said 3 weeks ago they were the biggest disappointment in the NBA, and some people were really pushing back on that, saying, oh, you're being over dramatic. They're 20-20 right now. This team should not be 500 in the Eastern Conference. They still, to me, they're the biggest disappointments in the league. And I don't even think that Harrison Barnes can salvage it here, at least not in the short term.
The one that's interesting to me about Boston prepping for them the other night when the Jazz played them is they're average at everything. Like, you look at them, they're like 14th offensively, 14th defensively, and you look at their four factors, they're average at everything. And none better than average, and none worse than average. And it almost makes you wonder if there's nothing in their roster makeup that gives them, that has an identity. They're kind of like, to me, they're just a bad half court offensive team. Like, they're 18th in the league in half court offense. They're third in the league in transition offense. If you believe second synergies numbers, they're 23rd in half court. Like, so that to me is more telling about them than anything else, is that they're just not good at it. They're good at open court transition, and it makes me wonder that there's a roster issue there. Let's go to Denver tonight, well, blowing out. Go ahead, real quick.
Yeah. On that one, Locke, let me just underscore it real quick. I think a lot of that problem actually goes back to Kemba. Their half court would look better if he was still getting the basket like he used to in his younger days. I think less than 10% of his field goal attempts right now come in the basket area. He's a quick point guard. He's supposed to be breaking down guys off the dribble. You're supposed to be in this spaced out offense with two wings who are big time scorers and outside shooters in Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. They've had some spacing issues because they play the big so much. So now Kemba's driving into walls, and Kemba, frankly, is just not turning the corner and getting the basket as much as he used to. And I think a lot of the averageness that you're describing can be traced back not only to his absence when he was injured, but also to the, you know, the quote unquote healthy version that we've seen just not being the same type player.
Detroit got a good win tonight, 116-112 over Toronto, despite Norman Powell dropping 43. Sadiq Bey, the rookie, had 28. This rookie class, which I thought would have no contributions at all and have no impact on this league, has a bunch of guys making plays. Sacramento got a nice win in Washington tonight, 121-119. Russell Westbrook had a triple-double and missed two dunks. Bradley Beal had 29 in the loss, because that's what those guys do, is they put up big numbers in losses. San Antonio beat Chicago 106-99. Zach LaVine continued to be amazing, 29 points on 21 shots. By the way, does LaMarcus Aldridge help anyone?
I mean, possibly. It would be a team that really needs front court depth. I mean, I've heard Boston, I've heard Toronto. I've even seen some Lakers fans ask the question, you know, like, hey, look, Marc Gasol and Montrezl Harrell have maybe been slightly disappointing this year. Just plug him in as another option as injury insurance. I don't think he's like a game-changing type piece, though, in the playoffs at this stage. What about you?
I think there's only one game-changing piece left. Al Horford.
Kyle Lowry?
Al Horford.
Interesting.
I think Al Horford could change the landscape if he goes to the right place. Maybe Kyle Lowry, but Toronto's loss tonight makes you wonder. All right, Denver beat Charlotte 129-104. There's nothing particularly interesting in this game. Denver with another blowout win. They've won 8 of 11 now, maybe 8 of 10. Where do you put them in the Western Conference hierarchy?
Well, I really want to love them. I want to have them as a top four team in the West, and I've just been so hesitant because I feel like Jokic spent so much of the season dragging them. Now, in this most recent push, it really hasn't been the case. There's been better balance. Now, obviously, he's still playing at an MVP level, but they're getting some other guys to step up. Will Barton's coming on a little bit. Michael Porter Jr. has had some moments. And Jamal Murray is definitely playing better, like, say, the last month than he did in the first month of the season. And that's going to be their formula. Like, it cannot just be the Nikola Jokic show. I think that they're going to need to make sure everybody's kind of, you know, helping and contributing, because as we were talking about earlier, that first round is such a gauntlet. At this point, I favor them over a team like Portland. I would favor them over a team like Dallas. Heads up in a series against Phoenix. I might even take Denver in that particular matchup. I do wonder if Phoenix getting a little bit too much credit and attention and love for its regular season performance. I question how much all of that's going to translate when so many of their guys don't really have a lot of postseason experience. But, you know, I still look at the Lakers and the Jazz, you know, being a cut above Denver on the playoff pecking order. I would take Denver over the Clippers right now, but to me that says even more about the Clippers and less about Denver.
He's Ben Golliver. Get him at the Washington Post. When's the book out, Ben?
It's out May 4th. I'm getting pretty excited. We're getting pretty close, Locke. You know, it's counting down. I'm getting the good nerves, the good anxiety, which is great. So people can check that out. Pre-order Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Powell's. Basically, wherever you get your books, just search for Bubble Ball in my name. You'll find it.
That is Ben Golliver. Get him at the Washington Post, at Ben Golliver on Twitter. I'm David Locke. Now tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On today.